Good morning, and welcome to you and our radio audience. We appreciate so much you tuning in, and we hope that you will listen for the duration of this program as we attempt to teach only those things that we find in God's holy and divine word. If at any time you have a question about something that's said on this program, or if you have a Bible question or a Bible subject you would like for us to deal with on the program, please feel free to contact us at the information that's given to you by our announcer. We've been studying from the book of Acts, and we've been studying from chapter 22, where we see a number of things that have transpired. The Apostle Paul has made his trip to Jerusalem, as he has indicated beforehand that he wanted to. But we find that when he gets there, there are those Jews, particularly those from Asia, who caused the city to be turned into an uproar. And they do so by making some charges against Paul. They said that he taught against the people, he taught against the law and against the temple, and they made the charge that he had even brought a Gentile into the temple. And so it is in the latter part of chapter 21 that we see Paul is arrested in order to protect him from the people who are designed to kill him. And we find that as he is being led away by the Roman soldiers, Paul asked permission to speak to the people, and permission is granted unto him. And that's what we read in chapter 22, is Paul's statement to the people, in which he gives a reaccounting of his conversion that we studied back in Acts chapter 9. And so where we are in our study today is in chapter 22, and to begin with verse 22. Now we see the effect that Paul's speech had upon the people. So let's begin reading in Acts chapter 22 at verse 22. He says, "They gave him audience unto this word, and then lifted up their voices and said, Away with such a fellow from the earth, for it is not fit that he should live. And as they cried out and cast off their clothes and threw dust in the air, the chief captain commanded him to be brought into the castle and bade that he should be examined by scourging, that he might know whereof they cried so against him. And as they bound him with tongs, Paul said unto the centurion that stood by, Is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned? When the centurion heard that, he went and told the chief captain, saying, Take heed what thou doest, for this man is a Roman. Then the chief captain came and said to him, Tell me, art thou a Roman? He said, Yea. And the chief captain answered, With a great sum obtained I this freedom. And Paul said, But I was free-born. Then straightway they departed from him which should have examined him, and the chief captain also was afraid, after he knew that he was a Roman, and because he had bound him. On the morrow, because he would have known the uncertainty whereof he was accused of the Jews, he loosed him from his bands, and commanded the chief priest and all of their council to appear, and brought Paul down, and set him before them." So we see that now the mob, as the end of Paul's speech, says, Away with him. But notice in what we read in verse 22, it says that they listened until this word. And what that has reference to is Paul's making mention of the Gentiles. It was with that they began shouting, Away with such a fellow from the earth, for he is not fit to live. So they want to kill him. They tore off their clothes and threw dust in the air, as verse 23 says. You know, it's hard to know exactly what these two actions meant. To be sure, it is a very vivid picture of an uncontrolled excitement that this mob has. They're in some sort of a fit of wild rage. And so it is that this seems to be some action in preparation to, or maybe even symbolic, of their stoning Paul. throwing dust toward them as they would if they would have had a stone in their hand, but that had not. And then we find in verses 24 through 29 that the soldiers attempt to scourge Paul. The commander, which we know was Claudius Lysias, commanded that Paul be scourged. The Roman scourge was a very fearful instrument of torture. It consisted of 3 to 9 strands of leather thongs weighed with rough pieces of metal and were attached to a stout wooden ladle. The person to be scourged was stripped to the waist and tied with leather thongs, either in a stooping position or suspended by hands above the ground. In fact, it is stated from historical records that men were known to have their eyeballs gouged out by the metal ends of the thongs, or to have their abdomens torn open during these brutal lashings. Tacus tells us that in such beatings, 7 out of 10 men died, literally being beaten to death, and the other 3 were carried out in a stretcher, and most of them remain crippled for the rest of their lives. But we see that the command is given that Paul be scourged to get him to confess that what he had done to stir up the crowd. So as they prepare for scourging, Paul asked if it was lawful to scourge a Roman who had not been through a trial and found guilty. That we read in verse 25. The centurion in charge then advises the commander to be careful, for this man is a Roman. So the commander asked Paul if he was a Roman, and Paul answered yes in verse 27. Claudius Lysias said that he had paid a large sum to become a Roman citizen. Some suggest that he is implying that since the price had become cheaper since he had become a citizen, that he is implying that Paul must have obtained his children's citizenship pretty cheap. Or it may be asking, how did Paul, not being able to pay such a large sum as Lysias did, how did he become a citizen? But Paul neither paid a small or a large price. He was born a Roman citizen, verse 28. So really, Paul stood as a more honorable Roman citizen than even the commander himself. So with this new information, they not only stop before they scourge him, but they are afraid because they are about to beat a Roman citizen. So in verse 30, we see that still wanting to know what Paul might have done wrong, Paul is brought before the council, which is the Jewish council, referred to as the Sanhedrin, and that we understand is, for all practical purposes, the supreme court among the Jews. Now as we turn our attention to chapter 23, we see that Paul is a prisoner, because that's what he's referred to here in chapter 23 in verse 18, when it says, "So they took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, Paul the prisoner, call me unto you." So he's called a prisoner, he's taken before the Jewish council, the Sanhedrin, for a hearing that really didn't last as long as they must have anticipated, because the meeting was disrupted in confusion. The hatred against Paul was so great that some 40 people had devised a plan to kill him by ambushing him, but that too is foiled. And so Claudius Lysias rushes Paul to Caesarea to Felix, the governor. But let's read the first 10 verses here in chapter 23. Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite him on the mouth. Then said Paul unto him, God shall smite thee, thou whited wall. For sittest thou to judge me after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law?" And they that stood by said, revilest thou God's high priest? And Paul said, I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest. For it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. But when Paul perceived that the one part was Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Of the hope and the resurrection of the dead, I am called into question. And when he had thus said, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, We find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. And when there arose a great dissension, the chief captain, fearing lest Paul should have been pulled in pieces of them, commanded the soldiers to go down and to take him by force from among them and bring him into the castle. So with this, then, we see that Paul very boldly tells the council that he had lived in all good conscience before God. Paul's point is that he had always been sincere. He had always done what he thought was right. And you know, it took courage to make such a bold claim of innocence before this council. To fellow believers, this was an honorable statement, but to the council, it was an insult to such a high and revered body. We know that a good conscience is essential. From Romans chapter 14 and verse 23, that whatsoever we do that is not of faith is sin. But it must be educated by the Word of God, because that's what our consciences are. They are a product of what we teach it. So the conscience is only as good as the knowledge that we have taught it with. So we see that Ananias, then, the high priest, commands that Paul be struck on the mouth to silence him for making such a claim. We know that such treatment was contrary to the law, as Leviticus 19 and verse 15 teaches. And yet, Ananias and the rest were going to judge Paul according to the law. So with that, Paul responds by saying, God will strike you, you whitewashed wall. And that is Paul making a charge of hypocrisy. That too took courage in to make that statement in the presence of this council. Paul was rebuked by those that were standing by. They asked, Do you revile God's high priest? In verse 4. And it was a violation of the law to speak disrespectful of the ruler of God's people, as Paul made that statement in Exodus 22 and verse 28. So Paul was wrong to do so. But Paul said he did not know that he was the high priest in verse 5. It may be that he didn't see who had given the order to strike him. Or it could be that Paul did not know who the high priest was at that time, because Paul has been somewhat of a stranger to the Jewish religion now ever since Acts 9, and that's been about 20 or 25 years ago. And it could be that he knew who the high priest was, but just simply didn't recognize him. He may not have had the high priest's garments on. But whatever the case, Paul is stating that he was wrong to rebuke him, and he cited, as we said, Exodus 22 and verse 28 as proof of that. So it obviously always takes courage for Paul to admit that he was wrong. And then we see that the heart of the problem with Paul was that he preached the resurrection from the dead. That was stated in verse 6. The resurrection of Christ was the center of Paul's preaching. If Christ was raised, then Christ is the Son of God. If Christ was raised, then all must accept and follow him. Those opposed to Paul did not like the consequences of what Paul was teaching. And we also learn in what we've read that Paul knew that part of the council was made up of Pharisees and part of them were Sadducees. That was seen in verse 6. These two sects tried to stand together against Paul, but Paul uses their differences to disrupt what would have not been a fair hearing if it had continued. So he firmly states that he was a Pharisee. He is being called into question about the resurrection, and the Pharisees believed in the resurrection from the dead as well as they believed in angels and they believed in spirits. The Sadducees did not believe any of that. So with Paul's statement, they now become divided and arguing among themselves rather than standing against Paul, as we read in verses 9 and 10. The Pharisees defend Paul, saying that he'd done no wrong, and suggested that if an angel or a spirit had spoken to him, then let that be the case. But we find then, on the other hand, that they would not want to fight against God. There was really a defense of themselves and a stand against the Sadducees rather than a vindication against Paul. And really, we find this is not that uncommon. Quite often, those who stand with you may be with you only because you are against one of their enemies. And the sad part is that that often happens among fellow Christians. So we see them, because that this dissension becomes so great, the commander had to take Paul by force to protect him and bring him into the barracks. And now we find that this council meeting didn't quite go the way that they planned. And then we see in verse 11, and let's see that we remind ourselves of what verse 11 said. The night following, the Lord stood by him and said, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, so must thou bear witness also at Rome." So the following night, the Lord said to Paul to be of good cheer. I think the New American Standard Version says, "Take courage." You know, Paul, no doubt, had to be discouraged and very uncertain about the future. In fact, Paul really never needed Jesus more than he needed him at this moment. And so the reason Paul should take courage is that his life would be spared so that he could testify of Christ in Rome. You remember that Paul had planned a trip to Rome when we recall the statement that was made back in Acts 19 and verse 21. But certainly, Paul did not ever think that he would go to Rome in this fashion of being a prisoner. All right, now let's turn our attention to the 12th verse of Acts chapter 23. "When it was day, certain of the Jews band together and bound themselves under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. And they were more than 40 which had made this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priest and the elders and said, 'We have bound ourselves under a great curse that we will eat nothing until we have slain Paul. Now therefore you with the councils signify to the chief captain that he bring him down unto you tomorrow, as though you would inquire something more perfectly concerning him. And we, or ever he come near, are ready to kill him.' And when Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait, he went and entered into the castle and told Paul. Then Paul called one of the centurions unto him and said, 'Bring this young man to the chief captain, for he has a certain thing to tell him.' So he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, 'Paul, the prisoner, called me unto him and prayed me to bring this young man unto you, who has something to say unto you.' Then the chief captain took him by the hand and went with him aside privately and asked, 'What is it that thou hast to tell me?' And he said, 'The Jews have agreed to desire together that thou wouldst bring down Paul tomorrow into the council, as though they would inquire something of him more perfectly. But do not yield unto them, for they lie in wait for him of more than 40 men, which he bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now are they ready, looking for a promise from thee. So the chief captain then let the young man depart and charged him, See, thou tell no man that thou hast showed these things to me. So we see that obviously being disappointed at having let Paul slip through their fingers, there's one group of zealous that determined that they're going to engineer a second opportunity of killing him, and that this time they was not going to fail. The next morning, after the Lord had assured Paul, several Jews were told more than 40, took an oath, saying they would not eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. You know, you would think that since they had failed, surely they starved to death, but not so. But we see now, just in this, the degree of hatred that they had for Paul and for the gospel that he preached. So they worked with the chief priest and the elders, telling them to have the council to call for Paul again, claiming that further inquiry was needed, and that they would ambush him on the way, as we read in verses 14 and 15. But we see that Paul's sister's son, this is, I believe, the only reference that we ever have made to Paul's family, and again, we know nothing more about his sister or her son. But Paul's sister's son found out about the plot and told Paul in verse 16. Paul then asked one of the soldiers to take his nephew to the commander so that the young man could tell him what he had told him. So he was taken to the commander and informed the commander of the plan, the plot. The commander took Paul's nephew, or rather, he tells Paul's nephew to keep quiet, and then the commander prepares to securely remove Paul from the danger. Here we have a good glimpse of how God's providence works. God had promised to spare Paul's life, as we read in verse 11. However, God used the nephew and the commander's plan to deliver Paul. So Paul did not sit with folded hands, but he did what he could to secure his own safety. Now let's begin reading in verse 23. And he called unto him two centurions, saying, Make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70, and spearmen 200, at the third hour of the night, and provide them beasts that they may set Paul on and bring him safe unto Felix the governor. And he wrote a letter after this manner. So the commander, Claudius Lysias, commands two of his centurions to get 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen, and their mounts, their animals, for Paul to ride at the third hour, which would be, in our time, about 9 p.m. And with that, we see that he writes a letter to Lysias, to Felix, that was sent along with Paul. And the letter that he writes is accurate. However, let's notice what he leaves out. In verse 26, Claudius Lysias, unto the most excellent governor Felix, sending greetings. This man was taken of the Jews and should have been killed of them. Then came I with an army and rescued him, having understood that he was a Roman. And when I would have known the cause whereof they accused him, I brought him forth into their council, whom I perceived to be accused of the questions of their law, but to have nothing laid to his charge worthy of death or of bonds. And when it was told me how that the Jews laid wait for the man, I sent straightway to thee, and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before thee what they had against him. Farewell. So with this we see that going on, the letter he writes is an accurate letter, but he leaves out the part about how he was about to scourge Paul when he learned that he was a Roman. Lysias sort of paints himself in a favorable light. To be fair, we must acknowledge that Claudius Lysias did protect Paul from the time that he learned that he was a Roman. He states in the letter that he found nothing wherein Paul was worthy of death or even imprisonment. The only thing mentioned against Paul was that the Jews had questioned him concerning their laws. That was in verse 29. Now let's begin reading in verse 31. Then the soldiers, as it was commanded them, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. On the morrow they left the horsemen to go with him and returned to the castle, who, when they were come to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before him. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province he was. And when he understood that he was of Cilicia, he said, I will hear thee when thine accusers are also come. And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. So we see then that the soldiers escort Paul from Jerusalem to Antipas, which is about halfway between Jerusalem and Caesarea, and where they stayed the night, and being out of the danger of the possible ambush, the soldiers turn back, the horseman continues on with Paul, who they deliver along with the letter to Felix. Felix reads the letter, and he asks what province Paul was from. He was told that Paul was from Cilicia. Felix said that he would hear the matter when Paul's accusers came, and he commanded that Paul be kept in Herod's praetorium. You know, from the standpoint of the Jews, little has been accomplished in stopping the Apostle Paul. We see our time is gone. We appreciate so very much your listening. We hope that you'll tune in again, and until then, that we bid you a pleasant good day, and now we return you to our announcer.